button here. Hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to the Great Scott Podcast. Today, I am joined by author Dr. Judith Orloff. How's it going?
It's going well.
Thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome.
So, Judith, I want to talk about empathy. So, because empathy seems to be something that you're a big part of. And you've even been named the godmother of the empath movement.
Yes, and I have this new book out called The Genius of
The
Empathy.
Genius of Empathy.
And the foreword is by the Dalai Lama, which I feel very honored by. And yes, I talk about empaths. Empaths are very important to me as I'm a psychiatrist. I'm also an empath. So I combine my traditional medical training with my empathy when I treat patients.
How did this whole thing start for you with being a someone who's interested in something like that?
Well, I grew up when I was a little girl. I was very sensitive and I would pick up things intuitively from other people. And my parents, who are both physicians, got upset by that. And so I was told to keep my intuitions and my sensitivities to myself. So I grew up believing there was something wrong with me in terms of, shame over sensitivity. And so it's become my mission pretty much. To be able to help people become empowered with their empathy and their intuition and their sensitivities and never to be ashamed by it. It's their beautiful gifts, and I encourage people to develop them.
Now, you also had a premonition when you were younger that you were going to go into the medical field, right?
I did. I had a dream. I had dropped out of school. I was living with my boyfriend in the May Company in Venice Beach. And I was living in an old converted brick laundromat, and I had this dream that told me you are to become a psychiatrist, an MD, to help legitimize intuition and empathy in medicine. And it came at a time like, what? I was not at all thinking about that. But because I was beginning to trust my intuition, I enrolled in one class in a community college. And one became two, became 14 years of medical training at USC and UCLA.
So, being in Los Angeles, have you ever had any celebrity patients roll by your office?
Many.
Any? Gotcha. I would ask who, but I know you're not allowed to say, so have to disappoint with some answers, I
No,
guess.
I'm under oath not to
Yeah,
reveal
absolutely.
anything.
Absolutely. So, you talked about how the Dalai Lama wrote the foreword to your book. How did the Dalai Lama come into your life?
Well, I sent him the manuscript of The Genius of Empathy, and I just sent it to an email address. I didn't expect much. And then months later, I get a notice from his reader that he finds the book very promising and wanted to write the foreword to it.
Oh, wow.
And so, I know. So it was one of those kind of surprising things. I put it out and it came back. As empathy and compassion are very, very important to him. And he happens to be one of my heroes. And so I think it was a good match because he believes in scientific explanation of empathy and compassion. And he's had all kinds of seminars and summits with many doctors to talk about that. And so I think it was a natural fit for his belief system.
You also do, excuse me, so you also do webinars on what you talk about as well.
Oh, yes, I do. I give on my website, drjudithorloff.com. I have webinars on empathy, on empaths and narcissists, on intuition for healthcare practitioners on how to develop their intuition with clients. I have all kinds of webinars that I love doing.
So what is it, people may not know, or maybe we'll talk about narcissism. What is it that drives a narcissist to do what they do?
Well, there's a chapter in the book on people with empathy deficient disorder. And these are the narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths. And empaths and empathic people tend to be attracted to them, and these narcissist deficient, this empathy deficient people happen to be attracted to empaths. And so it's a toxic combination. And so I really want to, educate empaths how to identify a narcissist and how to stay away from them, or how to deal with one if you must, if you have a boss who's a narcissist and you can't leave. But narcissists have empathy deficient disorder, meaning that they aren't neurologically wired like other people. And it's so hard for sensitive people to get that because they don't understand. If only I love them enough, they'll become this beautiful person. And it just, yeah, you're shaking your head. That's absolutely right. They won't. And no, a lot of people don't believe me because they feel this intense attraction to them from their love bombing, which is a technique they use where they love bomb you. So they make you feel like you're the most special thing in the world. Until you don't go according to their plan of everything, and they become cold, withholding, punishing, throw you crumbs of attention. They're not capable of love or empathy in the sense that we think of it. What they're into and what they want is power. And that's really important. Their motivation is not love, it's power. So all you empaths, stay away from them if you can, even if you're wildly attracted to one, stay away. And if you can't stay away, try and learn the lessons and get out as soon as possible.
I think that the most, and I'm not, I think I may be generalizing here a little bit, but I think that the most narcissist people are in the clergy these days.
They're all over.
They're
I
all over.
mean, it's amazing how narcissists are in practically every walk of life. It's a little harder, less in the healthcare professions because you have to give so much. And narcissists only want to give if they get something back, which we all often don't get a lot back, other than the satisfaction of somebody's healing or lack of or lessening of suffering. Yeah, the clergy. I work a lot with the entertainment industry.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people in power, have narcissism or narcissistic traits because they love the power. Power is an aphrodisiac to narcissists, whereas to empaths, not so much. We're not that into power per se. We're more into connection and love.
Yep, and one thing I see about narcissists is they'll hurt to that they will hurt anybody they can to get to what they want.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Because they lack empathy.
Yeah, they
If
lack.
they had a conscience, if they had the empathy, they would get some kind of feedback that, no, this isn't a good thing that you're doing. But they don't get that input. And it's important if you're an empath and you tend to be attracted to narcissists to realize they're not processing things the same way you do.
Absolutely. And so also on your blog, I want to talk about one thing that you talk about, the importance of tears, or the healing power of tears, rather.
We need to, get in touch with everything that motivates us, our emotional triggers, our fears, our anxieties, so that we aren't brought into the web of other people who trigger us. You want to notice your fears. What are you afraid of? Are you afraid of abandonment? Are you afraid of not succeeding? Are you afraid of poor health? Are you afraid of lack of success? Or afraid you're not lovable, whatever it is that you're afraid of, list the top five fears and be very sensitive that those are fears. Those are not intuitions. Those are not the truth about you at all. Those are fears, false information appearing real, fear.
And you also talk about crying makes us feel better even when a problem persists. In addition to physical detoxification, emotional tears heal the heart.
Yes, I love it when I cry. I don't cry nearly enough, but when I do, I really let loose. What it does is that it releases stress chemicals so that are not building up in your body, and they increase your endorphins. so that you have the natural painkillers coming to heal whatever wound you have. And so it's very healthy to heal. Women tend to cry. Women tend to cry more than men because it's been socially unacceptable for both women and men to cry, or anyone to cry. But it's more acceptable, I think, for feminine. But for men, they get called crybabies. They get shamed as little boys if they cry. The same with intuition. If they're intuitive or they're an empath, they don't like video games. They don't like going to big football games. They like going into the forest or playing music or writing poetry, you know, and they get called all kinds of shaming names from that. But it is healthy to cry. It's healthy for men to cry. It's healthy for everybody to cry.
I know at some point the body does need to cry in order to
Need
release.
release. You need release from everything that happens.
At some point your body will cry, and there's no holding back the tears either.
Well, a lot of people are pretty good at holding back of tears. They become like a rock. They become like a stone where the tears get layered inward rather than expressed outward. And so they carry around tremendous grief with them.
So I've heard also people express sadness in different ways. I know you had listed some, but do you think that that makes up for the crime?
Oh, it helps.
It helps.
I think nothing can make up for the crying. The crying is a natural impulse that we as human beings are given to release stress. And we want to release stress as much as we can. We don't want to build up excess stress. And so you have empathy for yourself. I have a chapter in the book on self-empathy. You have empathy for yourself. And part of that is allowing the tears to flow. Even if it's just in the privacy of your own home, if you don't want to cry around other people, that's fine. But just let them flow.
And you also talk about, as far as empathy goes, you say practice empathy with family, friends, and coworkers, even if you don't like them. And you also talk, you give like a 5-step method or how to have empathy when talking to these people.
Yes, that's true. I believe that it's important to have empathy with somebody, even if you don't like them, because I think liking someone is very overrated, and that we need to have respect for other people no matter what. Let's say we disagree with somebody and they're talking. You could give them a few minutes to express themselves and then say, I heard what you said. Thank you for sharing it, and I'll take it under consideration. Instead of getting into this with them, instead of battling, instead of being triggered and going to places you really don't want to go, just give them the decency of, I heard what you said. And the reason that that's important is that stops any resentments from building up in your system, as they attach to you resentments and you have bitterness and you have resentments and you keep telling the same story over and over again about how this person wronged you. And you don't want that. And if you have empathy with somebody's suffering, not what they're the horrible thing they did, but just why they're so miserable that they're acting this way, or they believe such, destructive things, you have to feel why that's not a happy person. Happy people don't do that. So if you have empathy for their shortcomings, then that frees you from thinking about them all the time.
Do you find that ever just talking to someone in a calm, normal tone, people appreciate that rather than maybe we have these preconceived notions, oh, this person's going to yell at me, this person's going to do whatever, shout at me or whatever. But do you ever find that most of the time, if you just talk to someone in a normal, calm tone, that's going to be a peaceful thing?
I think a calm, respectful tone, calm but firm tone, is important. It's not healthy, however, to stay with somebody if they're raging and they're putting you down. You must remove yourself from that situation immediately. That's very unhealthy. If somebody starts to rage in front of me, which is very rare, I will just say, this isn't acceptable to me. I've got to leave. if you can't control yourself. So I'm pretty good at setting that boundary, because as an empath, having rage on me is just like toxicity. It's just a horrible feeling, and it's not good for me. So I'm more than willing to discuss something at a later date, but not through rageaholism.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have more books than just the one that you had showed. You have about three or four other books. I know that one of them is the Empath's Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. That's another one, and there's a couple others as well.
Yes. I've written about a guide to intuitive healing, which is how to 5 steps to develop intuition if you're interested in developing intuition. And there's a book called Emotional Freedom, which helps you deal with difficult emotions and transforms them into more positive ones, such as depression into hope, frustration into patience. So it's a guide to your emotions. And this new book, The Genius of Empathy, is how you apply empathy to all situations in your life to better your relationships. A relationship without empathy is just not going to work. You know, if you keep fighting all the time, not going to work. So empathy can bring a different element into it to heal. And it can help heal you personally. It can help heal your relationships with your family and friends. And it could help heal the world if we showed a little empathy for our human family.
Absolutely. And so I want to give one more plug, Ms. Orloff or Dr. Orloff, to your book. It's called The Genius Guide to Empathy.
The
And
Genius of Empathy.
yes. And The Genius Guide to Empathy. And you can pick it up wherever books are. And I want to thank you for coming on to the program.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.